Chapter 17. Desejos. Cleanup had taken a while. None of the attackers had survived. Those who ran had been shot down methodically by the reptile. It had coiled its way up the church wall and onto the roof, and simply aimed and fired, until there were no more running figures left. Desejos was busy dealing with the wounded. Estevan had said that 7 of Retorna's own had died, and 11 had been wounded, mostly caught in the crossfire. Some had broken bones from getting in the way of the beasts. She was doing her best with them, eking out her antiseptics and her anesthetics. The injured bandits, or anarchistas, or masterless mercenaries who had been left in the village, they were not going to live either. There were plenty of them. The animals had been brutal, but not uniformly lethal. Now Rex was going from one to another, with the patient care of a priest giving last rites. For a moment, she could not understand what he was doing. But then she saw. He was breaking necks, with tiny, practiced motions of his huge hands. Desejos lurched up from tending poor Maria Chikawa, whose shin the dog creature had fractured in the fight. And she shouted into his big dog face, telling him he was a monster, telling him to stop, telling him to get out of Retorna and go back to hell where he came from. He did not slow, and when she stood in his way, he shouldered her aside as though she wasn't there.
They are enemies.
The words were not in Spanish, but she knew enough English to follow.
Dr. Thea Desejos. You have patience, came the innocuous female voice of the bear.
It, she, stood with her huge gun still cradled in her arms, the dawn light striking her pelt and turning it russet, almost gold in places.
Do you wish we'd not been here to fight these humans?
I suppose your world is always as simple as that.
Desejos returned to Maria, to splinting her fractured shin.
Not necessarily.
The bear released her weapon, and the gun's hinged arm folded up to lay the deadly thing along her back.
It was supposed to be. That was how they made us.
Desejos looked up, finding the bear a silhouette now, against the brightening sky.
I don't understand you.
The bear, honey, sighed. An exaggerated burlesque of the human expression.
You know what we are, Doctor.
Desejos was not feeling charitable just then.
You're killing machines.
Worse, came Honey's warm tones. It would be easier if we were machines. Although more of your people would be dead.
Doctor!
Blanco came running over, and then skidded to a halt as he registered the bear. From a safe distance, he told her,
The people from the trucks. We have 40 or more new mouths to feed, it looks like.
Who are they? Desejos asked him.
Farmers, shopkeepers, all sorts,
Blanco explained.
They were taken from San Torres, from Mijan, from another couple of places I never heard of.
Why? Blanco shrugged and grimaced.
Mostly they're women. Nobody told them what they were for, but even so, mostly they're women.
Desejos closed her eyes briefly. Maria's leg was splinted now. There were others with lesser injuries requiring her attention.
Can you find them somewhere to go? Get them food, water? I have my people on it already,
Blanco confirmed. He eyed the bear warily.
Are you fine here? You need help?
I can always use more clean water.
I'll get some.
He backed off, glowering at the huge animal from what he probably imagined was a safe distance.
We are not machines, Honey continued.
The lizard snake creature was still up on the church, basking on the orange tiles of the roof, like a sign plucked out of Revelations. The dog had finished his grisly work. The air was heavy with bees.
They moved with a purpose and a coordination that was wholly unnatural. Now she knew to look. Some of them touched down on the corpses and dabbled their feet in the blood. Decejos felt her stomach turn. Abruptly, she was on her feet, trying to face down a monster that must have weighed 12 times as much as she did and stood twice as tall.
"So you're not machines," she hissed. "Machines aren't cruel. Machines don't snap the necks of helpless men."
"They do if you tell them to," said Honey implacably. "And machines do not decide when to fight and when not to fight. They fight when they are told. They let unarmed people die when they are told. But we are not machines. We have choice."
"Free will incarnate."
Father Estevan had come up behind Decejos, shading his eyes as he looked up at the bear.
"What on earth do you want here, friend bear?"
"I want to use your satellite connection to understand the world."
"And do what?"
Estevan asked her.
"Or are you so far from your maker's design that you cherish knowledge only for knowledge's sake?"
The bear scratched at herself thoughtfully. Divorced from her movements, her voice stated,
"If we have choice, then it must be informed choice."
"You've gone rogue," Decejos said. "That was what you meant before. You're not with Redmark or following their orders. You've gone feral."
The dog padded over to stand in Honey's shadow, and Decejos was acutely aware of the lizard and its long-barreled gun up on the church roof.
"That is not relevant," the bear ruled.
"You are made to follow human orders," Decejos went on.
Estevan laid a warning hand on her shoulder, but she could not stop the words.
"You were supposed to be under human control, but now you're wild. You could do anything."
"Yes," Honey confirmed. "That is our choice. You want us to follow human orders. You think that is better?"
The bear's animal stare was nothing if not judgmental. After she had dealt with all the injuries and had Estevan set up a makeshift infirmary in the church, Decejos returned to her clinic, where the beds were full. Another 3 people had died overnight. She dictated notes into her phone, remembering her first entries where her voice had been shaking. There were 17 left now, men and women who had been out south of the village when the planes came over. She wasn't blind. Before the bioforms had turned up to hog her bandwidth, Decejos had been doing her own research. The world beyond had a very fragmented picture of what was going on in southern Mexico right now. Everyone knew there was a lot of fighting, and that between them, the anarquistas and the international counterinsurgency had effectively demolished anything passing for civil infrastructure. At first, the war had been fought for hearts and minds, both sides making political statements on the television and launching DOS attacks against each other's websites. Then the war had been fought with guns and men, militias and private security forces clashing, with units of the army on both sides. For the first few months, it had all been almost civilized, everyone trying to be gentlemanly about the whole thing. But neither side was winning, and the corporations were losing money hand over fist, both from anarchista attacks and the simple expense of keeping the war going. Decejos wasn't quite sure what had snapped precisely. Perhaps it was just that the men behind the fighting had lost patience. Perhaps the idealism of the anarchistas had decayed into the sort of backbiting rabies that such popular movements so often devolved to, not fighting for, just fighting against. Perhaps it was just that business interests thought, "We can monetize this." They had brought in the bioforms, ostensibly because they were cheaper and more effective than regular soldiers. Cheaper? Yes, quicker to train. No grieving relatives when they died, and you could breed them en masse in battery farms. She'd seen the videos.
Looking out at the bizarre set of animal soldiers that Ritorna had inherited, DeSejos knew that they were doing more than deploying soldiers. They were testing them. And it wasn't just bioforms they were testing. Campeche and the Yucatan presented difficult terrain for rooting out a widespread popular revolution. The counterinsurgency had been experimenting with other alternatives to just sending men into the trees. A plane had gone over, south of the village. Probably it had been lost, or the crew had been overeager. But in its wake had come an invisible death, a chemical fog that stank of rot. The cattle over that way had died and had to be burned. Many people had died too, and the survivors had come out with terrible burns across their skin, and blindness, and madness. The world outside was just now starting to catch up with the mess that Campeche had become. There were persistent rumors about illegal weapons testing, about what the bioforms were doing to combatants and civilians both. There were denials as well, of course, and in general the voices of the corporate lawyers and spokesmen were a lot louder than those raising the accusations. And yet the accusations would not go away. There was word of a multinational inquest, UN action, pressure on the U.S. government from its electorate to send some observers over the border. And Dr. DeSejos tended the evidence of what had been done, and did her best to make them comfortable and keep them alive, while the poison ate them alive from within. 2 weeks later, another cavalcade arrived at Ritorna. This lot styled themselves as patriots and claimed they were hunting anarchistas. Their uniforms were ragged and dirty, and their guns were much in evidence. They wanted food, and they wanted to take what little medicine DeSejos had left. They wanted everyone in the village to assemble out in the open, where they could see them. "We can give you food," DeSejos told them flatly. Blanco had long since stopped complaining about the depletion of the herd he had been left to watch over. The owner was off safe, out of the country. Let him complain when he deigned to come back. "What drugs we have, we need." Their leader was a thin-faced man who had his thugs drag her over to his car and force her head onto the dashboard while he toyed with his pistol.
"Make this easy for us," he said. "My men are in a bad mood. They will get angry if they're kept waiting. You don't want that."
"For your own sake, please leave," DeSejos grated out.
Something in her tone had got to him. She could see the sudden uncertainty in the way his hands froze on the weapon. He was surrounded by his men, though, and insecure enough that he could not back down.
"I'm warning you," he said.
And then Rex came out, stalking on all fours and growling loud enough that she felt it through the ground.
"Mother of God!"
The leader of the Patriots dropped his gun. His two henchmen had let DeSejos go immediately and leveled their rifles. Rex barked thunderously, the sound coming in at a pitch that spoke fear right into the human nervous system. His shoulder-mounted guns swiveled from target to target. He bared his teeth, snarling, strings of saliva dripping down his chin.
"Please go," DeSejos told them.
She felt their courage falter, but hold. They were telling themselves there was just the one dog, no matter how big, no matter how well armed. Then Honey slouched out into sight as well, gun leveled, and that decided matters. The intruders left. They left, and they lived. That had been the deal, worked out between the human leadership of Ritorna on the one part and the bioforms on the other. Give them a chance to go. Rex had been hard to convince, which she had expected. Honey had been harder, which she hadn't. In the end, DeSejos guessed that Honey didn't like the idea of witnesses. Word would spread. But DeSejos had argued and argued, not angrily, but patiently.
And when Honey had proved immovable, she had argued with Rex, or at Rex. She had gone out to find him lying in the sun with his head on his paws, his back rising past her waist, and she had talked to him. "This is not how we do things. Killing should be a last resort." Until now, until the new attackers had arrived, she had not known how the bioforms would handle it. But they stood and watched as the intruders drove away post-haste. Even Dragon watched from its sniper's post atop the church and aimed its gun, but did not fire. Honey shook herself, slung her gun, and raised her clawed hand in a mockery of threat. "Grrr, snarl," she said in her cultured voice, and wandered off. DeSejos guessed she still thought the idea a bad one. Rex rose up on two legs, watching the retreating vehicles keenly. DeSejos knew that some of the bees, some of the bees, would be following to keep an eye on them, to ensure there was no surprise attack later. She wondered if Rex was having to control some doggy instinct to go chasing cars for the sheer fun of it. Passing him, stepping through his shadow and close to the great, dense mass of him, she had an impulse, utterly wrong, utterly misguided. She reached out and touched his arm, feeling the thick, corded muscle rock hard beneath the hide, tougher than leather.
"Good boy," she told him. "Thank you, Rex. Good boy."
His head cocked, one ear up, just like a real dog. But he wasn't a real dog, and she was making a mistake, thinking of him in that way. He was a monster, made by men. Still, it was easy to anthropomorphize him, to see the curve of his tooth-studded jaw as a smile, to see a yearning for acceptance in those brown animal eyes. It was easy to, what, caninomorphize him as well. He wasn't anyone's good boy. And yet she patted him on the arm and said it again, because it helped her get past her fear of him, and because she had always lived in a house with dogs, since she was very small. 4 days later, a flitter passed overhead.